Welcome to the 171st edition of the God Gooner podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we're recording this on the Tuesday evening after Arsenal's defeat at Manchester City. They have the weekend off before travelling to Belarus on Valentine's Day next week for the first leg of their round of 32 Europa League game against Bartek Borisov. And rather a different podcast this evening because our normal venue has been double booked. We've only just found out, so we are now in the back room of the Gunners pub where they're kindly allowing us to record. So our thanks to them, and I will get on with the panel introductions. First up, a familiar voice and one of Mohamed Elneny's greatest fans. As I sit next to him for most home matches, I'm still trying to work out if this is a very prolonged wind-up or if he's simply delusional. You decide, listeners, but whichever it is, he's great company. So it's a very warm welcome to the man behind the spy column in the Gooner, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Oh, thank you very much for the kind words, Kev. And it's not a wind-up.
Right, you are delusional. Okay. Next, one of our more occasional panellists and a regular contributor to the Gooner. Although this season he's been having some IT issues, so his views have been held back a bit until now. It's been a poignant season for this long-term supporter because he, along with a few hundred others, was forced to sell his share in Arsenal Football Club when Stan Kroenke took over 100% control near the beginning of the season. And still, if his voice can no longer be heard at the Arsenal Annual General Meeting, at least he can have his say here. It's a very good evening to Mr. Bernard Dowling.
Thanks, Kev. Great to be here.
And last but not least, another welcome return. Talking of Stan Kroenke, it's apt that he is here, given the club's evident financial situation, which led to a very quiet January transfer window compared to the previous season. He can also possibly give us a steer on the changes in the club hierarchy after the departures of Ivan Gazidis and more recently Sven Mislintat. He's a spokesman for the Arsenal Supporters Trust, who at least get to put their views to the club in private meetings and at the fans' forum. It's a very good evening to Mr. Tim Payton.
Good evening.
Right, gentlemen. So, the last time we recorded, we were in the middle of a bit of a patchy run, and I think it's fair to say it has continued. What's gone wrong? We had a 22-game unbeaten run. The wheels have come off spectacularly. What's happened to this team?
Well, I personally think you could date it back to Manchester United away when we lost Holden. And we were at the peak of our 22-game run then. I think that was the last game, or the second to last game. We gave a good account of ourselves that night. And I would say that we possibly might even have won that game if we hadn't lost Holden in the first half. Ever since then, we've mixed and matched in defence. We've lost Socrates for long periods. We've lost Kajelny for a week or two. Mustafi's been in and out of the team. We've now lost Bellerin. But I think you can trace it all back to Holding going out of that team. Everything seems to have gone wrong since that day at Old Trafford. We never seem to have recovered from that.
A one-man team.
I'm less convinced about Holding, I must admit. I think it has a lot more to do with him switching from 4-4-2 to 5 at the back, 3 central defenders. I'm almost getting the impression that Emery, who I rate, but I don't think he's above criticism, and this is one thing I would criticise him for, has tried to solidify the defence by actually putting another central defender back in it to make it 5 at the back, 2 wing backs, 3 central defenders. Whereas the good run happened when we were 4-4-2. That's my own view.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're better with 4-4-2.
Yeah.
Because the extra man in the middle kind of negates being overrun in midfield and therefore putting more pressure on the defence in the first place. I'd like to see us 4-4-2 every week.
Yeah.
but I still think that these injuries to the defence haven't come at a good time.
No.
Right in the Christmas period, we are playing twice a week. I just think that it's a terrible obstacle for any manager to overcome, losing so many central defenders over a short period of time.
I mean, I also think it was crazy reverting to at Saka in central defence,
yeah,
just to make sure there are three central defenders in the side. You know, he's
no central defender.
He's never a central defender, but no, he was played there in a few games.
Yeah. Now we've got Mavropanos coming back now as well, which that's hopefully is going to help us.
Well, another young player who's really impressed me, we haven't seen much of him, but Medley.
Yeah.
You know, he's played two or three substitute appearances in the Europa League. I think he's looked sensational. But,
you know, do you think Emery's a little bit reluctant to put the youngsters in?
I would can only assume so, because I can honestly see the Greek kid and Medley being our central defence of the future.
Well, he sold Reece Nelson, or loaned him at the start of the season. We haven't seen Smith Rowe in any league games.
No.
He's now gone on loan, thankfully. And Ketty has not had a league start, or very rarely even come on as a substitute.
Yeah.
Willock hasn't played in the league at all.
No.
All of these are good players.
Yeah.
I think they should have more league time.
Yeah.
But your question was what's gone wrong.
Yeah.
I actually don't think much has gone wrong.
It's just
Arsenal are where I'd expected them to be. Looking at Arsenal's squad and players and the teams around them, I actually think if you'd have said two thirds of the way through Arsenal were within 3 points of being fourth, you'd probably say that's where I think we'll be, and I'll take that. I think people got far too optimistic with a run where they got some lucky results, they played well at times and they didn't really face the stronger opposition. The 22 games greatly bloated by all those Europa League games being included within them, and how the fixture list fell. I think this is turning Arsenal around. What Wenger left, and then some of the errors that were made with contracts and in the transfer market, I always thought was going to take 2 or 3 years. I looked at this season and thought fourth place would be a really good result, 6th place wouldn't surprise me at all, and it's kind of where we are. So it's more, I think, if you step back from living each game and perhaps getting a bit over optimistic and look at it in the round, and I think I see Arsenal taking the fight for fourth place right into the final 2 or 3 games, and I think that's probably what we'd all have hoped for at the start of the season.
I would agree with that, because, you know, although I was moaning about him playing 5 at the back, I've been impressed with Emery. But I think we have to realise, after the mess Wenger left, it was never going to be an overnight job putting things right. It was going to take time. That leads on to other issues about whether Kroenke will give him the resources to do it, which I think's debatable or even doubtful. But nevertheless, even if he'd had hundreds of millions to spend, I don't think it would have happened this season. You know, I think you've got to be more realistic about what Emery can do.
Well, on that note, I'm going to bring in a question from one of our listeners on Twitter. Neil Gillespie is the name he uses. I'm not sure if it's real.
But got a famous road name.
Well, this is why it may be a fake name. I don't know. Twitter names, who knows. But he asks, would any of the other managers we were linked with in the summer be doing any better than Emery had they taken the job? Or is our current situation as good as we could expect?
I think it's too early to say, and they're really difficult comparisons to make. What I can understand is when some people say you might have hoped that a new manager might have squeezed a bit more out of what he was given. You know, I don't think anyone was expecting to win the title, but maybe
can you
see a little bit more.
Can you organise average players to defend well?
You can. And I what does worry me a little bit is I don't really see the sense of purpose or what he's trying to do. Other than, there is an element of, I think, long-termism in him, which I applaud, because he's clearly decided that he's going to take on the Ozil situation, which, whether that's right or wrong, is a big call, and he's chosen to make it. You might think it'd have been better playing for time a little bit more on that one, using Ozil a bit more, partly. I think if you're going to sell him, you've got to have him in the shop window.
Yeah.
And, you know, it will probably, how that resolves itself over the next 18 months will probably define Emery's era, because, you know, partly if he's stuck with him, there's not much money to spend elsewhere. If he can move him on, because I think the relationship is probably broken now,
yeah,
and if he let him back in, it would actually look like a climb down from the manager. And I think we all remember, you know, George Graham was a classic, but George Graham was more evolutionary in how people like Anderson and Charlie Nicholas, even, they were edged out, weren't they? And it was all part of saying, you're the guys that live in the nightclubs too much. I want these younger guys who work hard.
I clearly remember with Steve Williams and George Graham, and the fans love Steve Williams. I personally thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he's my favourite player.
Yeah. George Graham rarely ever played him.
Yeah.
Everyone, he didn't even play him in the League Cup final against Luton, which I think was a big regret, because he might have won it if Steve Williams had been playing. But George Graham and Steve Williams had something between them. They didn't get on. And I thought the club suffered because of that.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'm not too sure the club's suffering too much with Ozil not being in the team, because it's proved last year we didn't. And results with him in the team weren't any better than what they are.
It's very early to judge Emery.
I would say about Ozil is that I think we desperately lack any creativity these days.
Yeah.
You know, Mkhitaryan's, you know, not outstanding anyway.
We've missed him as well.
But without him, I think we're crying out for somebody like Ozil to actually create something.
Yeah.
But without him, it was
apparent at Manchester City on Saturday that we have nothing to create in that second half.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, the first time in 5 years we spent 45 minutes without having a shot on target.
Yeah.
Well, the team is so unbalanced.
Yeah.
You've got two world-class strikers in there, no one's providing them any service, and they're getting in each other's way.
Mm.
It is really unbalanced. I hear people saying, oh, I've got every confidence in Emery, and I think, well, how can you possibly know yet? You haven't seen enough. Get one or two grumbles saying, oh, he's no good, he should be out, and I'm saying, don't be ridiculous, he needs more time. In reality, it's only half a season. I mean, this time next year, when he's had a full window, a whole summer of working on it, you'll really be able to make a view. Clearly he's not a disaster.
No.
Clearly you haven't got a situation where you have to move him on, although, you know, someone did remind me that Bruce Rioch probably had a better season and it was certainly easier to watch than we're seeing now, and he was turfed out for Arsene Wenger after a year.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I would imagine that was down to David Dean wanting Wenger anyway.
Apparently you had to work very hard on the Arsenal board to make them do it.
So unless, you know, there's somebody there that somebody in the hierarchy wants in, I can't see that happening. I think Emery will be here at the very least this season and next season.
He's got a 3-year contract with a 2-year break.
Yeah, and
2-year break, just explain that.
Well, I think they got the right to terminate it without any cost.
After 2 years?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So if they paid him off this summer, they'd have to pay him 2 years.
Yeah.
Which we think is $4 million a year.
I think it's probably a little bit more than that, but it's in that region. But having just spent $17 million on paying off Arsene Wenger and team, they don't want to do it again.
No,
they wouldn't like to.
Yeah.
I mean, Simon Rose, who, one of our contributors, writes, given that so many Arsenal fans were desperate for change, how can Emery out exist as a concept, given that funds are limited, at least till the summer? Have Arsenal fans got so used to protesting that Emery will do as a target to sate that appetite?
Simon's usually sensible, but there is an Emery out. Come on.
I haven't seen it.
It's perfectly legitimate to grumble about a team selection.
Yeah,
also, I might have done this differently, or I might have done that, and question where he's heading. And I see that all the time. That is what going to football is about.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point in all going? We all go because we all think we can pick a better 11 than the manager.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no Emery out at all, and I think Simon's slightly dramatising that.
There were some dissenting voices on Talk Sport on Monday morning after the Man City game. And they were probably, the Talk Sport presenters were probably goading them into ringing and saying,
well,
they wanted Emery out.
And of course, the media and social media, you know, 1 in 100 might say, oh, Emery out now, and it gets the attention because it draws it up. But I have not met, you know, I've met a lot of Arsenal fans who are a bit unsure, think he's made the wrong choice in the tactical battle with Ozil, or tactical or selection, other issues. But there really isn't. Emery out, if you go back to Wenger out, there are marches, there are protest banners, there are supporter groups surveying their members. There is a infrastructure there, and there's none of that. So come on, Simon, put yourself together.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, I was moaning about playing 3 central defenders. You know, I still want him to stay in the job. You know, it's just, I don't think anybody's faultless.
Yeah,
so,
no.
You know.
The other thing we must remember, I think, and I've keep reminding people of this. We must stop placing so much focus on Emery. He's only the head coach. Arsene Wenger was the manager. Now we have a club structure where two or three people are involved. The decision on the Aaron Ramsey contract was taken above him. The decision on how much money is available to spend and what he can do in January is taken above him. We had a scout, a head scout, he's moved on, but we've also got a kind of head of football and others in the infrastructure. So going forward, I think, you know, if we're going to start pointing fingers, it's not so much about the manager, it's about the setup and what they're doing collectively, because he's a lot less involved. Although there is a bit of a discussion about in the last few weeks whether a bit more power has been reasserted, but I think you take my general point.
Yeah.
Even in the programme, he's not called manager.
No, head coach. Yeah. I think he could do himself slightly more favours if he doesn't play Lichtsteiner anymore this season, because every time he's played against a big team this year, City, United, and I think there's been others.
Was
Maitland
well. Niles on the bench?
No, he's injured.
He is injured. So it was basically Jenkinson or Lichtsteiner.
I think if you'd have polled 100% of Arsenal fans before the Man City game,
it's a tough call, though, isn't it?
Or Lichtsteiner, I reckon 90% would have said Jenkinson. And I think in hindsight,
you've got Aguero and Sterling. Which one are you going to stick in at right back?
He went for experience, and experience didn't pay off. I'd be surprised if Lichtsteiner plays in any of the next three or four games.
Well, he'll play in the Europa League, I suspect.
I don't know. Do you think he could play?
On the subject of Emery, do you think the language issue is helping him because it actually means that he can't be held very accountable, or do you think it's hindering him because he can't totally communicate what he needs to?
I think hindering actually is it. I think hindering, it's like, I mean, Wenger spent 22 years in England and you still struggle to understand what he was saying sometimes.
No, that's not true.
I mean, he still spoke with a very, very strong French accent.
Yes, but you
could
understand him.
I know, but with Emery, he talks in clichés still.
Well, he talks in riddles.
Yeah,
I think.
But that might almost be deliberate.
Well, I mean, Pochettino used it very deliberately for a long time, didn't he? Yeah. And they do it, which, you know.
And it's a good way to avoid a question.
I mean,
the debate I've heard is that by far the most important words that he uttered since he's been here in English were, "We can only make loans." Because to me, that is either a mistake that's just come out, and the club are like, "Oh my God, what have you said? What have you done?" Because it does create a downer on the club and the mindset. Or so it was either a mistake by Emery, or it was very deliberate.
Yeah,
it was his way of saying, "I have got my hands tied now."
You wonder whether Arsene Wenger
job
would have
I
said
want
that.
To. Arsene Wenger would never
or
have said
he would have,
it.
Arsene Wenger would have taken a hit for the board.
But also for the club, I'm not so sure for the board, but I think he might have realised that if you announced that, you kind of, you know, and also there's 10 other players or 20 other players that want to hear that better players are coming to support them.
Yeah.
So I just,
I think Wenger would have said,
I'd love to know when he walked out the room from having said that, what the thought process was, mistake or deliberate finger pointing.
Jonathan Houseman, he says, with Emery quite rightly unwilling to protect the owners, revealing that he can only make loan signings in January, probably due to their lack of support when three key players are ruled out for the season, would he walk in the summer if a £40 million budget for spending is true?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kev. No, he won't.
No, of course he won't, because he'll wait for his payoff. No manager ever walks.
Not only that, Emery hasn't spent very much at any one club, very much time in any one club, apart from Seville, and even then he was only there for three years.
Valencia also 3 years.
Yeah. He sees Arsenal as a project from what he said to the press, and he kind of enjoys the fact that he's going to have to build the club up without the resources.
Yeah,
he sees it as a challenge. So I'll be very surprised if he walks, because he hasn't got more than 40 million to spend.
No, that's right. And also I think we need to forget about managers staying as long as Wenger and Ferguson. It's not going to happen anymore. They were the last two ever happen with.
But hang on, I'm going to just play devil's advocate there. Let's say Jurgen Klopp gets into a bit of a vein of success at Liverpool.
Yeah.
I could see him staying for 10 years.
He's been there three already, hasn't he?
Four, I think now.
If he wins the title this year, he's going to save another two at least.
I just think basically it is dependent on expectations of the club and the manager's own satisfaction of what he's doing.
Stop. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I
half agree with Bernard here. He called him the manager twice.
Ah.
I know it's an easy slip. I'm kind of somewhere in between. I don't think we'll see the 20 era again. And also, they were part of where Arsenal have got to get to, and United have struggled, is to change the infrastructure so it's not dependent on one man. Although I think this idea that you have this sort of group of people and it's all hunky-dory is a bit of a myth, because of course part of what happens is they fight with each other. At least when you've got someone like Arsene Wenger, the only fight that's going on is inside their own head for decision making and where things go. But back to on Jonathan's question, he won't be going anywhere. Partly, like Steve said, it's a bit of a project and a challenge for him. And secondly, if it does go sour, and by sour, let's say we come six and we get knocked out in the quarter final of the Europa League, he won't go. He'll wait to get sacked, because then you get your payoff, and we've seen with the accounts recently, like Arsene Wenger did.
But also, I mean, even if Klopp does stay another 2 years after winning the league, 5 years is nothing like 20. So,
Well, let's imagine that Emery's going to be around for a while. The Highbury librarian has asked which current squad members will be, and this is a hypothetical question, which current squad members will be in Emery's first great Arsenal team? So
Guendouzi, definitely. Is the best buy we've made of a player that age since Fabregas.
Yes, easily.
He's unbelievable, Guendouzi.
Well,
every time I watch him.
We've got our value for money.
Every time I watch him, I think...
I'm not sure he's Fabregas, but he's a very good signing.
Oh, yeah. In 5 years' time, he'll be at Manchester City, Barcelona, Real Madrid.
So we won't be in Emery's first great
or Manchester United. He won't be playing for Arsenal, that's for sure.
I don't know where sign him on as long a contract as possible.
So would I.
Now.
Oh, for a 19-year-old, he's unbelievable.
Yeah,
I was watching that game on Sunday against City, and him and Torreira gave as good as they got in midfield. I thought they were brilliant. The pair.
I mean, you said he's not Fabregas. I don't think there's much in it, to be honest. I think he's easily the most exciting youngster we've seen since Fabregas. And
well, Jack Wilshere was quite exciting.
I don't think he was as exciting as the other Guendouzi and Fabregas.
Guendouzi takes your breath away with some of the things he does.
Yeah.
And the way that teams target him,
and I think
they see him as our danger man, and he's only 19.
I think he has strengths that Fabregas doesn't. I mean, his positional play, demanding of the ball.
Yeah.
You know, if he played alongside Vieira and Petit, who's the best central midfielder I've ever seen at Arsenal, he'd be demanding the ball from him.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I'll tell you how good he is. He could walk into City's team and Liverpool's team and not look out of place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I just hope he doesn't do that in the next few years.
Yeah. If I take your question literally, there is, and I don't know whether we come on to this, I've already banged on a bit about it. It's a huge challenge to turn Arsenal around. A great team these days in modern football means winning the Champions League, or at least kind of reaching a final, and winning the Premier League. And at the moment, I'm not sure I see that happening
in our lifetimes.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's at least 2 or 3 years away if they manage to get every decision right between now and 2 or 3 years. And it's a tightrope, because get one or two more decisions wrong and have a couple more years of Europa League and the financial situation, it could get really difficult. So I don't know if I've been a bit miserable with that or evaded the question, but I would be quite happy if in 2 years' time Emery has basically re-established us with a couple of fourth places, and then that just starts to give you the glimmer of rebuilding.
Yeah, I think we've got a core of a very, very good side.
Really?
Oh, yeah, Torreira, Guendouzi, Lacazette, Holding, Bellerin. Five players there. Still going to be there in 5 years' time, hopefully.
Okay.
4 years' time.
Well, I mean, it does look like the policy will also look to use more.
Well, we'll have to sell one or two of those to rebuild.
Well I hope not. That was what Liverpool
really
did, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that's how Klopp's done.
See, the worry is if in 2 years' time Barcelona come in with 150 million for Guendouzi, we're not going to be able to say no to that.
Liverpool sold and bought very well, and part of the challenge is I'm not sure who I see that Arsenal have to sell that creates anything like the level of income to spend at the level you need, because you've got to be buying world class.
Mm.
Well, here's one which I can think of some an answer to this, but Keith Bowman has tweeted, other than flush it down the toilet, how better would you have invested the $35 million we spent on Mustafi? So, you know, in a way, this reflects on Emery's inheriting a little bit of a mess.
You could buy 10 more Guendouzis.
Well, the interesting thing was Van Dijk was available for less money than
and
that.
Arsenal did flush about $15 million down. If you remember, they went in for Mustafi sort of in early June, got rebuffed, or it didn't work out. Wenger didn't want to pay the money that had been agreed. And then we had an injury, and I can't remember who the injury was, but we had a central defensive injury in like early August during in a pre-season.
Gabriel.
But then we went back and were clearly like desperate and ended up paying 35 million. It was a classic of kind of, you know, oh, here we are being really smart and tight and clever in the transfer market. Yeah. And we've just paid double what he's worth.
We wasted 18 million on Perez as well, didn't we?
No, it wasn't that much.
I think we paid 18 million for him.
Really?
And actually, in terms of waste, there's probably a lot more waste there than with Mustafi.
But to be fair to Mustafi, I think he did make a fairly good start to the season. It's just he's been very poor since coming back from injury. You know, I mean, he would be a million miles away from my worst ever Arsenal team. You know, I think we've seen far worse central defenders than Mustafi. I would be perfectly happy if he was sold. You know, I'm not saying keep him for the next 5 years or whatever, but yeah, I think some people exaggerate just how bad he is.
He's a conundrum though. If we could get Chambers back next year and sell Mustafi as a straight swap, so invest the money that we're going to get for Mustafi somewhere else, get Chambers back as a replacement, would you be happy with that or not?
Well, Chambers was part of Fulham's defence when they were absolutely awful. You know, I've got cousins who support Fulham, and they tell me he was half their problem. It's actually since he's moved into midfield, he's improved quite dramatically.
He's doing well in midfield.
But as a central defender, I'd probably go with Mustafi.
Do you think he'll be back next year?
No, I doubt it.
Think you'll go somewhere else?
Yeah, I think it'll move on.
Well, talking of signings, how do we reflect on the Sven Mislintat? 16 months, I think it was, at Arsenal?
A bit less.
I mean,
I must admit, I was devastated when I heard he was leaving.
Well, I mean, there was a theory that he was the thing that was going to save the club because of our financial situation.
Did he have anything to do with Torreira and Guendouzi?
Well, he did.
Well, no, I'm not sure about the Guendouzi. You don't really know. But, no. Well, the Guendouzi one came out of the French network. I'm not so sure here. I think part of the problem around the Sven Mislintat was he was overly sold when he was brought in. And partly it was because he was brought in at a period when people were so disenfranchised with Wenger, but there was still this fear that he might cling on forever. And it was one of the few symbols of change. You remember, we lived with that word catalyst. You remember that?
Yeah.
Because he was going to be a catalyst to change.
Yeah.
And the first catalyst that things might be changing was the shaking up of kind of like the football scouting. Now, if I say to you, tell me who the head scout is at the other big clubs, and you wouldn't know.
No.
I think he got massively over-promoted. And also, he's not out there watching all these games. That's the scouting network. Mm. And there's no such thing as a like secrets anymore, like 20 years ago or even 10. Every club, people will say, oh, we were watching him for 3 years. That's because someone's got an index card, and it's not done on index card anymore. It's done on computers and databases. Every player in Europe is pumping through the systems and like being monitored. So, of course, a good manager, someone with a good eye, someone with a good network in that role matters, but it's not that important. They don't pick the team. We've still got scouts watching in Italy every game, France every game, Germany every game, feeding it back. Part of what matters is that the manager trusts the scout and it ties up. For years, Wenger was pushing back all the scouting reports and saying, I'm not sure, don't want him, and so on.
Well, you're using the word
so
manager.
Where I'm coming from a bit there is, I think a lot of people, and Steve was starting to say, oh, I invested a lot in Sven. I think perhaps you over-invested because it was at that time. You were desperately looking for anything to hang on to because you were just so fed up with with Wenger. And he looks a bit rock star, doesn't he? Yeah. Even the way with the satchel bag and the big. He looked like Bjorn Borg after a night out.
He's got a family, hasn't he?
But one of the most known strikers in Europe was playing for Dortmund.
Yeah. He might have persuaded him to come.
We spent £60 million on it. No, Aubameyang came because we tripled the wages compared to what Dortmund can pay. Yeah. So I don't buy that one. And yeah, he went back kind of for a goalkeeper out of that league. But come on, a goalkeeper that was in the edge of the Germany squad. You can sense my
Socrates.
I think it's interesting to see what happens now he's gone.
I think it might be unfair saying Miss Linter only knew players based in Germany. You know, because
when he was working for Dortmund, he would have had. He would have had a network.
So I strongly suspect he was heavily involved, or would have been heavily involved, in the Guendouzi move. And
Torreira?
Why not? Yeah.
Okay. For that, what
we don't know, and he might be totally, but of course, again, Torreira, wasn't exactly an unknown. He was playing for one of the largest Italian clubs and was in the team going to the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. For whatever reason, whether there was a clause, but it did seem to get him at a reasonably good value. For where he came from. But I just think we must be careful about this idea of idolising the head scout. Because I also think they all have a purple patch, and then it averages on. Do you remember for a while it was a guy at Newcastle, Keane, who was supposed to be the genius, and then the guy at Leicester,
who went to Everton.
There's always a flavour of the month, and by the time they're heard of, they've moved through it, because they're always going to get a couple that work, a couple that don't work, and then they make their name on whether or not they're almost on the scales, and they're getting 60% right and 40% wrong, rather than the other way around.
That when he was here in 2018, we signed Aubameyang, Torreira, Guendouzi, Lino.
But what on earth were we doing signing Aubameyang when we had Lacazette and we put all our money into another world class striker? Yeah. Surely the bugger should have been out there spotting some potential defenders for us.
Yeah.
Well, he
sold Theo in the same window he bought Aubameyang. So, there's an argument, especially given how Aubameyang sometimes plays wide, that he was replacing like for like in a certain way.
But all I know is that last summer we brought in some excellent players at quite good prices.
Yeah.
And we didn't do that in the previous two or three seasons.
What I don't know is how much is that because there's an amazing head scout out there, and how much is it because you've got a managerial situation where they're prepared to do it again? Because for whatever reason, Wenger seemed to get stage fright on signing players.
Yeah, very, very hesitant.
And I don't know. And maybe I'm slightly making the counter thing here, but because I actually think what's happened on the Sven situation, if you actually want to read it, is he was because he just brought in the kind of football contacts man, Raul Sinelli. I heard Gazidis say at Fans Forum, one area where Arsenal were weak, where we don't know any of the super agents, because we had it mixed in that world. All these scumbags.
They deliberately decided not to,
partly because they couldn't play in that game, and partly Wenger didn't like doing the big transfers.
Yeah.
So ironically, we bring in a man with the Rolodex of all these big super agents, the Mendes, the Anioli's and so on, just as we haven't got any money to spend with any of them. But it was almost like, so on the one side we brought on the man with the contacts book from Barcelona, knew the kind of agents, and on the other hand we upgraded Steve Rowley just with a European version that had the contacts and the network there. And then Gazidis was in some ways going to almost be the counterweight. Gazidis went, so in some ways you had a bit more of a power struggle. At the same time, you've got a Spanish manager in who, just apart from anything else, you've heard his English, probably far more comfortable talking to Raul. And I think what you've seen there is the Raul-Unai Emery relationship is tight. Sven has felt a bit left out of all of that. Perhaps was hoping to get the technical director job, but he didn't get. Watch it go to a Spanish speaker is my prediction, or someone that's worked with them before. And that explains it.
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned Steve Rowley. I went off him when I heard that he actually talked Wenger out of signing Van Dijk from Celtic. Was it for 12 or 16 million?
Something like that.
Because Rowley considered Van Dijk too nonchalant. you know, anyone who doesn't see the quality of Van Dijk is not worthy of the job of scout, in my view.
And yet Wenger kept him on. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
These people in the back room who underperformed were kept on for the pure reason they didn't actually challenge Arsenal.
No, exactly.
He's still there now, actually, Steve Rowland.
Is he?
No, he's gone.
No, apparently he's there in a consultancy role.
I suspect that within that 17 million that was used to buy out Wenger and team, that he went there. But definitely, the Arsene Wenger coaching staff and football staff went far too long, because it needs freshening up and modernising. Back to where I started, I think we saw Sven Mislintat as the first stage of the refreshment, over-invested in him, arguably, of his role at the club. So when he went, a more down than we should be. I don't think it's a huge issue. Of course, what might be a big issue is if we've now got someone that wants to sort of do deals with the super agents, and we're kind of picking up deals here. I never really believe the Hernandez and the other stories from the transfer window, but time will tell. Was Torreira an amazing signing, or could any of us have said that we just need a young, strong, defensive midfielder?
We hadn't signed
and get round on the pitch. We haven't signed one for 5 years.
Well,
any one of those thrown in our team would look good.
Wenger obviously thought we didn't need one. But I don't know. Yeah. Regarding, you made the point about changing the backroom stuff. I think Wenger kept his number twos for far too long. I mean, did he ever have anyone other than Pat Rice and Steve Bould? I can't think of any.
He didn't.
And he was there 22 years.
And he only replaced Pat Rice when Pat retired.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the regularity.
Well, he never had anyone that might come in and shake things up or challenge him
or
create friction.
Look at the regularity with which Alex Ferguson used to change his number twos. It was every other season.
The players need a different voice.
Of course they do.
Yeah. Neil Banfield. I mean, I rest my case with Neil Banfield.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell was he doing?
What's he doing now? I'd be interested to know if anyone's employed these people.
What's the name of the new number two? He does a lot of pointing and shouting.
Carlos
Calcedo.
He's certainly got a lot to say for himself.
Although Steve Bould, interestingly enough, has not changed one little bit.
He's so conditioned.
I mean, if I had to bet money on it, I think Steve Bould will move on this summer.
I think he will.
I think he's on very good money. And
But it might be. I might be with Bernard is, I mean, there were one or two of them on good money, and they felt, well, why should we pay them off? Let's take advantage of what's left on the contract, and also it provides some stability and continuity, because literally everyone would change. I'm only speculating, looking at the situation.
So his contract would run out this summer.
An awful lot of them had contracts that ran to the same length as Wenger's, because it followed him.
Yes.
So I'm with Bernard. I would have thought there's a good chance that he'll go now.
Yeah.
And he was partly there just because otherwise it would have literally been like nobody and no continuity at all. And like you say, why pay him off? I heard it might be a million, that kind of level. Why not? If you're going to pay it, whatever, why not take advantage of him? He's clearly not saying very much.
No. Certainly not coaching the defence.
Well, no. On that note, do you think one of the reasons Arsene isn't managing is because perhaps in his contract he would sacrifice his year's payoff?
It's a perfectly reasonable
conclusion
to make, because a lot of those contracts are based on mitigation, and if you get another job, you don't get paid as much.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't start work until next summer,
69 this year, is it? 69? He has said, hasn't he, that I can't wait to get back into football.
Yeah, I mean, he said he was going to get
in
a job
December,
in
he said,
January.
I'm going to get a job in January.
Yeah, that's right.
He doesn't need any more money.
No.
I mean, he's always liked earning it more than spending it.
Which is an argument for him to sacrifice, let's say, 6 months of his payoff to get into a job.
I think it's far more likely that he hasn't been offered
the
job that he was.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
I personally think Wenger would love to take a top job.
I mean, it was Do you think that he didn't pitch up at Huddersfield, did he?
Yeah, exactly. If he'd got the
funny job. Enough, though, I think he'd be good at one of those clubs.
Yeah, I think it.
Someone like Huddersfield, he'd be
I think at. Huddersfield, Fulham, Brighton, places like yeah, that would yeah. take him yeah. in
well,
the
they'd
second.
Take him. Yeah, but it would be such of, a come
the,
down.
Yeah, the kind of club Wenger would want to go to, I don't think they're touching with the barge.
Did Bayern replace their manager, or did they?
No, he's still there.
He is still there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the other job was Real Madrid, which obviously, 10 years ago maybe. And is Gattuso still at Milan, or have they got rid of him?
Yeah, I think he's still there.
Yeah, I think
he's pretty sure he's still there.
But obviously there's the whole Gazidis thing. We don't know whether or not he would entertain working
them,
with Arsenal.
I don't see them reuniting somehow, no. Not after the final year particularly. Hello, Arsenal. Hello, Ivan.
Yes.
Interesting.
Would you like to talk to each other again?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised he's not been offered an international job.
Well, I thought it would be an international job, or almost like running the technical setup of a national federation. Mm.
All right, well, let's talk about creativity and getting another question. I think it's probably be the last listener question, so I've got everybody in. And it's Joe Gagliardi, who says, since the board made a commitment to Ozil, is it not the manager's job to somehow get him involved in the team?
You're talking politics now.
It is politics.
Well, the board give him a contract, but there's 40 players at Arsenal who've got a contract.
Yes.
None of them have a right to get picked.
Yes.
They have to...
It is on merit, isn't it?
Support. What the manager, what the board have done is give Unai Emery a contract and tell him to get the best results possible for the club, and they need to kind of, for better or worse, they need to back the manager in doing that until they decide he's no longer the man who's going to do better than anyone else.
I think in a simplistic level, you could say, yes, he's on 350 grand a week, he's a highest paid player, he's very creative.
Get your money's worth,
play him, put him in the team. And I dare say that would probably work to a certain extent, but he's on 350 grand a week. You could get rid of him, save that money, and pay three players.
You can't
for the
get,
same
that's
salary.
That's the problem, because he's on that money. How do you get rid of him?
This is where the politics comes in, because Emery is obviously not playing him in the hope that, come the summer, he says, "Well, do you want another season like the last one?" The alternative is to take whatever is on offer, and we'll pay half your salary.
Right, well, it's a Winston Bogard situation at Chelsea then, where basically the player decides to put his feet up and possibly even have the ignominy of training with the kids
the
now.
Reserves,
He's going to poor chap's going to have to get Belarus next week, isn't he? It's really cold. I would probably think that there is a big element of what Steve just said there. The other thing that I wonder is when you're trying to impose a mindset of pressing more, of working hard, of team ethic, that by dropping Ozil, you kind of send a good message to all the other lads in the squad.
Yeah.
So I take your point that it's a message of almost like, life is so bad here, you might as well clear off, get a few games, go somewhere sunny, where it'll be more nice for you. And I think that must be a factor. But I also think there's got to be an element here about it's setting an ethos.
Yeah.
About how you want Arsenal to be. And if you he was taking the piss, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was clearly taking
especially
the piss. He woke up at some tough away games, he didn't fancy it. Some games at home, quite frankly, he didn't fancy it. And don't tell me that the other players in the squad don't see it.
Ramsey actually let the cat out of the bag in an interview. I think it was actually on Arsenal.com. Where he basically said sometimes he asks for the day off,
Oh, yeah, I read that.
So I think sometimes it's about, his job is to create a team, and sometimes you have to be tough on, a talented member of that team who doesn't perform.
Yeah.
Because what are the rest thinking?
Yeah.
And that's where I think he's probably now in a real difficult situation, because if he relents and let him back in, not sure it's a great message for the ethos of what he wants to do with the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean,
he's never going to change.
Historically, I think Emery likes a high pressing team, which simply isn't Ozil's style of play. Having said that, if Emery could find a way of incorporating him with everyone else doing the pressing, I think it would be to Arsenal's benefit, because, as I said before, we lack creativity without Ozil. So, for me, the ideal situation would be until the end of the season, play Ozil a bit more than he is at the moment, or has been lately. And if he can somehow create enough chances to win us the Europa League or something, absolutely brilliant, and then he can be moved on. You know, for me, that's the ideal way of doing it.
Yeah, it's a shame we can't keep him.
Yeah.
Because I think his talent is second to none.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the work rate and the politics and the salary that goes with it that always makes that impossible.
I mean, you've been around as long as me.
Yeah.
I remember Alan Hudson.
Oh,
supremely gifted.
Player.
One of the most
brilliant player.
Technically brilliant players I've ever seen in an Arsenal shirt.
Oh, gotcha.
He simply didn't work.
No.
You know, or when he did, he was a genius. But, you know, if anything, Ozil was the modern-day Alan Hudson.
Yeah.
Supremely gifted,
And the fans loved Hudson as well.
But having said that, the intensity of the game was very different then.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
you could afford to have players like Hudson without it being so costly. And I think now, because of the physicality and intensity of the game.
Look at the pitches in those days. I mean, this time of the year.
No, I do agree with Kev.
Yeah, I mean, the pitches were horrendous in those days. You had to work just to get through the match.
But they weren't moving at anything like the pace, were they?
No, they probably
weren't. I mean, they weren't fixed in a lot of cases.
No.
The games use they weren't. Gave their bodies.
The games probably weren't as 100 mile an hour.
You could not get away with today. I mean, the Tuesday club, it couldn't exist today in a top level team.
No.
So let's think about Europa League, because that could become very significant for the club. And made the semi-finals last season, and interestingly enough, I looked at the betting earlier for the winners of the tournament. Chelsea are 4-1 favourites, but Arsenal are second favourites at 5-1, behind teams like or ahead of teams like Napoli, Sevilla, Valencia, Inter Milan, and Salzburg, and Lazio is another one. So, I mean, the bookies, they're not idiots.
No.
They seem to think Arsenal have got a very decent chance.
I would agree with them.
Even with our defensive frailties.
Yeah, I do. I mean, you just named the other best teams apart from Arsenal and Chelsea. I think Arsenal should beat any of them. I think playing Chelsea eventually, which I think Arsenal will do in the Europa League, will decide who wins it, whether it's the final, whether it's one of the semi-final or whoever wins when Arsenal play Chelsea, obviously if it's the final, but even before that, I would make the survivors the firm favourites.
Going to be a tough one. We have to beat them to win it.
Yeah,
mind you, all those teams. I mean, historically, they've all got.
I think you're rating them on their historical.
Yeah, they've all got a good history.
If you look at the current European coefficient, which is kind of like a ranking on performance over the last 5 years, then Arsenal and Chelsea are well above any of those others. Also,
even Sevilla.
And if you
because they're in Champions League.
Well, Sevilla knocked United out of the Champions League last year.
Undoubtedly, I would have thought Sevilla and Napoli are the two, particularly with a home and away leg, where it could you could get troubled a bit. But you know, on paper, in terms of quality of players, well, certainly in terms of wage bill, if you're playing top trumps on wage bills, it would be Arsenal and Chelsea in the final.
Yeah.
are we going to be attending a 5:55 kickoff on Thursday the 21st of February?
I'm very much looking forward to it, Ken.
Right, I am, because the atmosphere will be surreal. And it'll be an experience to be there.
I think I'll probably go. It's outrageous, isn't it? It's outrageous on the behalf of UEFA for putting a kickoff into that time. And it's outrageous by Arsenal that they're refusing to refund people who can't make the game, because of course season ticket holders are forcibly made to pay for that ticket. And I...
you know, I take that you buy a season ticket and you accept the kickoff times change, but 5:55 is not a reasonable time in my view. It's work, you know, it's impossible to get there for most
people.
There's
lots of away games at 5:55, haven't we?
From work.
Oh, but that's an hour ahead.
Yeah,
in the European.
6:55 over there.
So,
or sometimes later.
Yeah.
So it you know, it is better.
Yeah.
And this comes at basically because Chelsea and Arsenal have been drawn at home at the same time, which can happen in the later round.
Yeah.
But it's a sad sign of where football is going, that the TV money means that the people that actually go in and create the TV pictures don't count at all.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I will be going, but it's a pain in the neck.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. It'll be funny walking out of an evening game.
At 8 o'clock.
I'm not for that. It's
so surreal.
Yeah.
What do you reckon the real attendance will be?
I would say 20.
Yeah, I would have said about 20.
I think slightly more than that. I think more like 40.
Oh, no.
Well, there's
no
traditional disinterest in
you
Europa
don't
League.
Haven't had anything like that number at the Europa Leagues anyway. Put it this way, I actually went out to Belarus last year. And that is a real farmer's team. I mean, you know,
they are the longest odds to win the competition.
I mean, Arsenal will probably be 4-0 up,
right.
You know,
so it'll be a nothing game.
So it'll be a nothing game. It's in February, the end of February. It'll be dark and cold. It's at 5:55. I mean, you know, I really do. I'm with you, Kev. 20,000 best.
It'll be interesting, isn't it?
We may well be seeing Denis Suarez play simply to him to get used to.
Well, I think we'll have to play.
Well, he's got to play sometime. He's got to look better than he looked in the 20
well, this,
minutes.
This
at,
is
at
the
Main
question.
Road.
What do we have high hopes for Denis? He's not going to be as good as the last Denis, is he?
Oh, God. Difficult, isn't it? You don't know.
I mean,
do
the
you?
YouTube video,
you really
he looks sensational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Why didn't Barcelona give him more game time?
I don't know. I mean, I did see that little run that he had in the Copa del Rey Cup when they played him, and he went on that little slalom run and scored a goal.
Yeah.
He's obviously got talent.
Yes.
But my worry is that he's got an Ozil work rate situation.
Not at Barcelona. Well, it's difficult to imagine.
He never played for them.
Will he never play?
Why he hasn't played?
No, but he was bought up. Oh no, he went to City when he was young, didn't he?
Yeah. But having said that, Emery does know him. So,
well, that's a point, actually.
Yeah.
So
he played in one
signed.
Of his Europa League winning seasons.
Yes. Yeah.
One imagines that he can contribute.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's an unknown quantity, Denis Suarez.
But one
could
thing
be brilliant, could not work
about
out.
Suarez I found quite amusing was that Arsenal.com had this massive headline, Suarez scores a screamer in training.
No.
Who gives a damn
yeah.
what he
yeah,
does
yeah,
in training?
Yeah.
Yeah. My
I would
Lord.
Rather have that Nkunku guy from PSG,
right?
Who partners Guendouzi for the French under-21s,
yeah.
apparently. And apparently he plays well with Guendouzi.
Yeah.
So I think I would rather have him.
What I can't decide on this transfer, you can have a glass half full or a glass half empty approach towards it, I think, is this loan with a view to buy. The glass half full is you're getting 3 or 4 months to have a look at him.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a sale or return issue. You get a bit of time to think about it. The glass half empty is you're not convinced he's good enough to buy.
Mm.
Now, if you're not convinced he's good enough to buy, what's he doing here for the next 4 months?
Well, it's also financial in Arsenal's case.
Well, no, because Arsenal can spend 20 million this summer, whatever. It could be that they decide they want to spend it elsewhere, partly on where he's at. I think probably they've done the right thing here. But it is a bit curious, isn't it? It feels like something that a club scraping to get by does.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
People say it's an Everton signing, which is...
But why?
My guess
is, if he's good enough for the Arsenal first team, why haven't we paid for him and bought him now?
Yeah.
I guess it's partly to see how he adapts to football in England, because although he was at Man City as a kid... he never played for them, as far as I'm aware.
It's quite unusual. It's sort of saying, then that we're not sure you're going to adapt.
Two
we're not sure you're good
enough.
League Cup. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. He certainly looked a bit bewildered on from. what have they done to me?
Did you see the way Guardiola went up to him when he was warming up, put his arm around him and said, you know, good luck, son, and all that.
Yeah.
I hate the way Guardiola does that. Because to me, I know he's not tapping him up because he's never going to sign him again. But I just hate the way Guardiola gets into an opposition player's psyche by he's putting his arm around him. No, don't want that.
Yeah.
It's like when Mourinho at the cup final. Is it the cup final or the Charity Shield? It was Charity Shield, wasn't it?
He shook all the players' hands.
He shook all the Arsenal players' hands. I thought, get your hands off our players. I don't want you touching our players.
We haven't won it.
I know, but I just don't like it. I don't like it when... Yeah. And if he starts putting his arm around Guendouzi, then you should worry, definitely.
Right, okay. Well, they might buy him.
Yeah.
We did a little exercise before we started recording where I asked the panellists to predict the win, draw or loss for Arsenal, United and Chelsea in their remaining Premier League games. And there was a consistency in terms of the number of points Arsenal would get. It was either 70 or 71. And also in terms of their finishing position based on these results. The panel all agree Man United will finish fourth, Chelsea will finish fifth and Arsenal will finish sixth. Now my question, and I think this might be one more for you, Tim, in terms of your thorough knowledge of the finances, although Bernard also is on the ball there, how many seasons would it set the club back if they did not make that top four?
If they don't make the top four, and even more if they don't make the Champions League out of the Europa League, although that is definitely like only half of what you need to do because you don't make as much money, it's really going to make things tough for Arsenal, because they're now kind of like breathing fumes in terms of the financial situation. This year, as we speak, sitting here, this season, so season 18-19, Arsenal are going to lose about £70 million. That is because the wage bill, the amortisation bill, which is the average, you know, when you buy a player, it's spread out over 2 or 3 years, you make the payment, and the cost of running the club is £70 million more than is coming in. If you had another year of Europa League, yeah, there's some new commercial contracts starting, but you'd be looking at probably making a loss of £20-30 million the following year as well. And the only way through that is to make some significant reductions to the wage bill, and not that includes not bringing in very many people because they increased the wage bill. So it would be incredibly tough, and I think we've seen some media comment based on briefing today that Arsenal might have 40-45 million to spend. I think that if they were in the Europa League situation again next year, that's the kind of amount you'd be looking at. On top of that, trying to take some money off the wage bill. So, you know, if you think that we've got a challenge, everyone's talked about a challenge, we've got the squad now, you're not going to have a lot to change it.
No.
Or wait for them to come through. So, so you can tell, I mean, that even at the briefing I went to with Vinay and Rao, it was all about getting into the Champions League is kind of like where we've got to be. And they say, you know, financially and as a club positionally. I also think it's a status thing. I mean, a third year in a row, really, you start to become a Europa League club.
Yeah.
So it's tough. Just a final sobering thought to leave everyone with. I'm sure Bernard will add because he covers the figures as well. Is this season that we're sitting in now is the first season, certainly modern football history, where Spurs will bring in more revenue than Arsenal will.
Yes.
Didn't you say earlier, Tim, that if you get to the final of the Europa League, you make more money than if you get to the last 16 of the Champions League?
Well, yes, because if you qualify for the Champions League through the Europa League, what happens is you join the other four teams, in effect, in the English pool. The way UEFA do it is they distribute the English broadcast money from the Europa League to the teams involved. But you're squeezing an extra team into that pool. So what happens is the fifth place team only gets 10% of the pool. So, you know, if you get in the Champions League but only, say, play four home matches because you go out in the round of 16 and you only take 10% of the pool, you may well earn less money than in the Europa League. So by far, far the better scenario for Arsenal is to come fourth rather than win the Europa League. What I also think, so I'm talking too much now, but I think we, you know, in your prediction game there, you had up Chelsea fifth, Arsenal sixth. Both of those teams are going to not know whether they need to concentrate more on the Europa League or the Premier League, and that could be interesting in terms of squad selections and what they do going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think Kroenke is far more concerned with the club making as much money as possible than with winning trophies. And failing to get into the Champions League either this season or next season will, I believe, spell the end of Emery's time at Arsenal, being it coincides with the end of his contract. I think Kroenke would also be willing to use that as a cover for his own lack of ambition in a way. He can, or people speaking for him, because he never says anything much, would be able to say, it's the coach, not me, not Kroenke, and I've done my bit by sacking him because of the lack of success. Don't blame me, blame in this case Emery or whoever comes after Emery. I'm strongly suspicious of Stan Kroenke. I think him being the owner was the worst possible outcome that was facing us. And yeah, I'm very negative about the long-term future of the club, because it's not so much who the coaches are, who the players are.
For the ambition of the owner.
The owner,
right.
Or his lack of ambition.
On that note, the analysis Simon Hill did suggested that Stan didn't take any money out of the club in the year that that was covering. Now, that year, was it the one that finished in May 2018?
Yes. So the period when Usmanov still had 30% and people like Bernard were still shareholders, and you wouldn't have expected to see anything in that period. If you remember that, you know, he did start taking management fees, and there was such a fuss at the AGM and elsewhere that they stopped that. And, you know, at least that was stopped. And I wouldn't have thought he'd want to pay a dividend when some of it went to Usmanov and other people, and certainly the Arsenal Supporters Trust, that owned 8 or 9 shares. I mean, it's nominal, but we would have handed a dividend back, you know, which would have been hugely embarrassing for him. But what we don't know is what's happening since. Although at the last fans forum, the AST did press on this issue and said, can you confirm no money is being taken out in management fees, in dividends, to cover loan interest repayments, and or in any other way? And Vinay Venetian said, no money is being taken out of this club. So that's an encouraging
could
answer.
He afford to take it out?
Well, yeah, he could, because he could just decide to spend less on a player, and there's quite a lot of cash flow in that club, so he could take what we were concerned that is the loan that he took out from Deutsche Bank to pay for Arsenal. He basically borrowed 500 million to round it off, to buy the rest of the Arsenal shares, will cost him about £15 million a year in interest payment, and we were very concerned that £15 million might be taken out to pay for that. I have to take, you know, Vinay Venetian at his word. You know, of course, there's still 3 months left of this financial year, and I don't know whether his answer means up till now, but, you know, I'm hopeful that we won't see that go out, but we have to watch.
I thought he said there are no plans to. Didn't he use the word
he plans may
to?
He may no, have it, well, it's
to
not
be honest, when I read it, that sounded thoroughly unconvincing to me. You know, I
was a lot more encouraged by the answer than not having one. But I wouldn't now go and say, right, we've got 100% guarantee assurance.
Yeah.
Partly, like you said, that I partly read it that he said no money has been taken up to now.
Yeah.
And I think the big decisions are taken in April, May.
Yeah.
Just as you get to the close of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got to keep an eye on that.
And also, am I right in thinking annual accounts don't have to be produced now?
Well, no, they do. They less information is available in them.
Right.
And they're tabled much later. So you might have, it was only last, about 2 weeks ago, that the annual accounts came out. Those are the ones that we'd have normally seen in September.
Mm.
So it's 5 months late, which partly makes scrutiny and accountability harder, because you're talking about such an older period.
Yeah.
So we will see next February what they did up until May, which will be really interesting. If he's paid a dividend or a management fee or a loan fee, it will be covered in those accounts.
Mm.
But they're much shorter than what we used to get provided as shareholders. And we also, of course, we don't get the accountability of, for instance, asking him questions about them.
Yeah.
The other directors. So it's reduced because they're later and there's less information there. But we should still be able to see.
Yeah.
Like you, I'm less concerned than I was after that answer.
Mm.
But we have to keep a close eye on it.
Yeah.
Of course, final word, chaps. Is there any hope that Kroenke will sell sell out to anyone? Is anyone going to buy him out in the foreseeable future?
He holds for the long term. It's an investment based on his view of what is happening to the value of English football TV rights, because that's what he bought. A stake there. It's got a long way to grow globally. He's got a son who, if you like, is in the business and is going in the same direction. Look, there's always a chance he could die. He's, you know, they could decide they don't want the investment, but I would have said it's 99.9% that they'll still be around in 5 to 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And where will Arsenal be in that time?
Well, we don't know. I mean, the Glazers on one level aren't good owners either. And yet but they've managed
At least Arsenal, and this is a testament really to Fisman in many ways, indeed, are in a situation where with good management and a bit of luck, they can win things. Because that big stadium and the brand and what's being earned now, I partly fear more for what Kroenke and his ilk are going to do, not so much to Arsenal, but to the fabric of football, trying to create European Super Leagues, trying to create even more and more cash within the Premier League, so we're watching a kind of league within a league. And you could say, you know, to me, it doesn't benefit Arsenal if you end up watching, you know, 16 Premier League games which are dull because there's too much of a mismatch, and then in the European League, which is closed, the same teams are invited every year, it's kind of like fodder, we just have to keep buying tickets here there. But that is definitely where they want to take the English football and Arsenal.
And this European League would just replace the UEFA competition.
Yes, so you'd in effect closed.
You'd still have your domestic league.
But what they want, and what Kroenke up with, is we've spent a large part of this evening talking about whether Arsenal will get into the Champions League or not. That's a good thing, because that's actually what keeps us interested. Yeah. That's why we're going to watch till the end of the season. It's kind of like a different form of promotion and relegation, which is what football is based on. They are trying to create, they are pushing for something where that ends, because every year you just play in it.
And you're in there because you turn over.
You're in there because you were one of the founding members and it's a franchise. Yeah. Mm. And that, to me, that's when I...
You found a stadium that holds 60,000.
That's probably when I'd stop bothering, because it's not become a competition anymore.
Okay. Some would say lots of people have stopped bothering now.
Well, there is an element of that. Anyway, we've got to wrap up because we've gone over our hour. So we'll just say the next issue with the Gooner is scheduled to go on sale at the Southampton home game. Although if it arrives earlier from the printers, you may be able to pick it up at the Bate Borisov game at 5:55 the Thursday evening before. In each issue, there will be an A5 flyer with details of the campaign to raise 1,000 subscribers ahead of next season, so that the fanzine can continue printing. With sales outside of the stadium falling gradually, we need to ensure we can cover the bills before committing to another season. The deadline for us to reach our target is March 23rd, when the final issue of this season goes to press. Details can be found already of how to subscribe on our website store under subscriptions. There are links in a lot of our tweets. And if you bought the current issue, the rear of the calendar also has all the information. Hopefully we'll be around next season to continue giving you a healthy 68-page dose of fan opinion, ex-player interviews and nostalgia. As ever, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at GoonerPodcast and email goonerpodcast@gmail.com. Many thanks for your questions and topics submitted for today. With that, it is goodbye from Tim.
Goodbye.
Bernard.
Goodbye.
And Steve.
It's goodbye from him.
We'll be back with another podcast in March. Until then, this is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thank you for listening. La-di-da-di-da. La-di-da-di-dee. All good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey! Bernard, why don't you join in?
We're not mad, by the way.
We're recorded.
We're not recorded.
It's a podcast for an Arsenal magazine.
Oh, yeah? What's the magazine called?
The Gooner.
The Gooner.
The Gooner, yes.
Yeah.
And where do you do it from? Where's your office, your central office?
Well, it's produced at my flat in Leytonstone, normally. Yeah, but we normally record in a community centre on Gillespie Road.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, we're double booked tonight. So we came in here, they said they'd make it, you know, we'd be all right in this back bar. They turned the PA off and we recorded the show.
Nice to meet you, Jay, yeah?
Pleasure to meet you, sir.
Yeah,
you're an Arsenal man?
All my life I've been married.
Fantastic.
Top of the hill, Jack Winkle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you want a quick half before we go, Kev?
Go on then.
Yeah.
You know my stepsister,
Right.
Where are
Beverly.
What are the others?